You can't start the car. Johnny has the keys.
Hello, hello, and happy Halloween, all of you out there in podcast and YouTube land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, a podcast and YouTube channel where we cover genre films, science fiction, and this week, of course, horror. And two guys talk about all the references to those particular, the key elements of those particular genre pieces and the things that they in tune influenced after that. It's Halloween. It's our last of our big Halloween epics. If you are new to us, go back and listen to the rest of Halloween and also the past 5 years of stuff that we have. You can find that on johnnyhasthekeys.com and also through your podcast of choice, sort of speak. If you're returning, thank you guys. We really appreciate it. Without you guys supporting us, we wouldn't be doing this. So we're glad that you're back. My name is David. I'm here with my co-host, Tim. Tim, happy Halloween to you.
Happy Halloween. How goes it?
It's scary. It's scary all the time.
You've got more pumpkins than me.
Which is why this is my favorite time of year. I love this. This is, you know, you have your Christmas people and your Halloween people, and I'm definitely Halloween people.
Me too.
So happy that it's finally here, and we're having, and this year hopefully people will actually get out and do stuff and you know,
and not get sick. Yeah,
and not get sick and not stay in the house. Yes. And what have you been doing this week in preparation for Halloween
or new genre week? Genre week extravaganza.
Yeah.
I basically decided to delve into a Shudder film. Imagine that, because Shudder has my horror movies. And I watched what I would call a cosmic horror comedy called Glorious.
Glorious. Okay.
This movie is getting really high ratings on Rotten Tomatoes. And I thought, well, it's new. It's cosmic horror, if you notice those tentacles in the poster behind me. So it looks kind of Lovecraftian. I thought, I need to see this. And I liked it. It is a good movie. I would not rate it highly as a horror movie because, honestly, it is a comedy.
Okay.
I've never seen a Lovecraftian comedy before, but I thought it was done actually quite well. The director is something McKendry, Rebecca McKendry, and she really hasn't done anything of note. A movie called And the Creatures Were Stirring, and she did one called Psycho Granny. But this one, she scored two great actors, which helped propel this movie. One of them is J.K. Simmons, who plays what I would call one of the old ones. You never see him. He just voices it. And of course, he has a very distinctive voice.
Yes.
And I'm going to butcher this name. It also stars Ryan Quanten, who is, okay, I believe, Australian. And he played Jason Stackhouse on True Blood.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of ironic when you think about it, because of our topic today has Anna Paquin in it, and she played Sookie Stackhouse, who is his sister.
Yes.
So anyway, Ryan is this down on his luck guy that's broken up with his girlfriend. Looks like he's living in his car. He's at a rest stop and goes into the bathroom, and all of a sudden he is like in a portal to another dimension. He's sitting on the toilet, and the other dimension is in the stall next to him. And he can see it. Well, he's not supposed to look through it. There is a glory hole. And that's why the movie, I guess, is called Glorious.
Okay, then.
And there is a monster that says he has to do a certain thing, or the monster's father is going to invade the Earth and destroy the world. Hmm. And he has sealed up the rest area bathroom, which is really disgusting. And basically the entire movie takes place in that bathroom and him talking to this demonic monster in this closed bathroom stall.
Okay.
So it's got gore and a few suspenseful moments, but it's really not a horror movie as much as it is a comedy. So, and there is one point you see him holding a leg, I believe, in the poster, where he literally is trying to break down the bathroom door with the leg of somebody that had previously got in and got killed.
See, that seems like such a, you know, like a Stephen King short story. It seems just like, very you know much so. What I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I highly recommend it. If for you, for those of you looking for horror, it's not a horror movie. I mean, you'll be disappointed if you want horror. It is much more of a comedy. So that's what I did this week, this Halloween week.
That is really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. I would not have thought of that sort of thing.
It's on Shudder too for folks out there that want to see it.
What? Shudder? You're kidding. I got into something really different and really weird. I had said I was going to do two or three different things and I was looking at them and then I got sidetracked and it's sort of horror and sort of science fiction and maybe and sort of not sort of thing. Anyway, I got hooked on Netflix's Sandman.
Oh, I want to see that.
It is pretty freaking incredible, actually. Okay. I've got to admit. I've never been a comic book fan, really. I never read comic books when I was a kid and everything else. However, I have read a few graphic novels. I read Dark Knight, the actual graphic novel about the old Batman and everything, and loved it and thought it was great. And then got turned on, of course, to Watchmen and loved Watchmen. For
sure. Those are classics.
And the only other one I ever heard about in my, you know, my pseudo-comic quest was Sandman. You have to read Sandman. It's a great graphic novel. It's incredible. It's by Neil Gaiman, yada, yada, yada.
Have you read them?
Did I have not.
Oh, okay, because I
have not. But the detail in the story and the way it is done and the way it is directed is phenomenal. For those of you unfamiliar with it, Neil Gaiman deals with really, because I watched a couple of episodes of Gods and Monsters, his other
American Gods.
American Gods, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, unique casting, everything else. He's very mythic in his storytelling. He likes to take, I guess you, what's the writing term for it? You take something like dream and make it a person. So you take an inanimate object.
I don't know what that word is. Personify?
Well, but it's anathromorphize or something. You take an inanimate object and you make it a living thing, sort of thing. So what he takes are these
animate
these ideals, these emotions almost or whatever, and make them persons. They're all siblings. They're all one family.
It sounds very Greek.
Sort of. Mythology. Yeah, it's very mythic. Is the way it is. But anyway, it follows the Sandman, who's also known as Morpheus, who is also called Dream of the Endless. And the Endless are what he perfects in this series, are in the comic, the graphic novels, evidently. And hopefully, I'm not finished the series. I'm like two episodes away, and I wanted to try to finish it before this, but I couldn't. So next week, I'll give you the recap of the ending. But anyway, but basically, it follows these characters who are siblings, the Endless are all siblings, and their death, desire, delirium, dream, all of them are this family of people who have their own realms and can coexist in the mortal realm in some way. For example, Morpheus, dream, is the keeper of all dreams and imagination. So whether it's nightmares or dreams, he has influence on them and controls them. And the basic story, without giving anything away, because it happens in like the first 15 minutes, is he's just going about his business that he has been doing for millennia, you know, since the dawn of the universe sort of thing, which is basically making sure that dreams don't go too far, making sure that nightmares don't go too far. He's the balance of the dream world sort of thing. And unfortunately, this mortal who has acquired all of the grimoires and everything he needs performs a ritual and captures him. So he captures Dream And so for a hundred years, the mortal world goes crazy because no one is monitoring the dreams. So some people can't dream and some people fall into what's called a dreamless sleep and they, you know, can't wake up even, sort of thing. And it's very interesting. And it's all about this is our, he's an anti-hero, I think, at the beginning, but then he suddenly becomes a redemptive character. And it's very unique, incredibly good cast. He has to go to hell at one point, which you would love, and the way they interpret hell and the way they do it and everything else.
Lestat does that in Anne Rice book.
So yeah, a very mythic, very cool story. I can totally see all of the hype that this series got on Netflix and why.
Well,
it's
what put Neil Gaiman on the map.
Obviously.
That's the first thing he did where people went, this guy's the rock star. And then, of course, he's gone on to do, like you said, other ones. My nephew Jason loves American Gods, the book. He actually sent me the audiobook, and I've never listened to it. And now I feel like I should watch the series. But I thought, you know what? I may watch Sandman first.
It is so well done and well lit and just the framing that they do. I mean, you know how in Watchmen, we loved Watchmen because you could see the comic book frames coming to life kind of thing, the way they shot it and the way they did it. This is the same way.
Okay.
They do images in it and using CGI and the backgrounds that they use. And you just go, oh my gosh, that is
do
just.
You know, is this guy known for anything else, the director?
It has multiple directors.
Oh, okay.
But like this is
or the showrunner, you know, I guess.
Yeah, this is an image from the publicity of the show, and basically, you know, it's Morpheus with a raven, and then his realm in the background, and going up a staircase to nothing, sort of thing, and it's that kind of imaging that they do. It's really good.
Awesome.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to it. I do.
Yeah, and it's scary in places, which I think you'll like, and a fitting transition to scary because that's what we're doing today.
Maybe I will start it tonight.
Scary, you should. It would scare you. Yes.
All right. Well, that brings us to our little segue, and you know it is Halloween, and I kind of thought, what could be more appropriate than a movie entitled Trick or Treat?
Yeah. I'm there with you.
Just checking.
Yeah.
I had never seen this movie, but I had heard really good things about it. And now that I have watched it, I was like, wow, how did I let 15 years go by and not see this movie? I really, really enjoyed this movie. How about yourself?
I have to agree. I loved this movie. I thought it was so much fun. It was so good. There's so much to say about it. First of all, I think neither one of us saw it in 15 years because they tried to bury it. I mean, it was made in 2007, but they didn't even release it to DVD till 2009.
Yeah.
Like 2 years later. And they just kind of, and I had never heard of it. Like I said, our listeners don't know this, but you do because I told you when we were prepping for this, you said, you know, it was on our list, Trick or Treat. So I looked up Trick or Treat, this movie from 1986. And it was about a rock star that they bring back as a demon.
And Gene Simmons is in it.
I went, this movie is horrible. Why did Tim pick this movie? And then when we were talking about it, you went, that's the wrong one, David. Don't do that one. Do this one.
It's Trick or Treat.
But this movie is, you know, there's so many Christmas movies out there and so many movies about Christmas or Christmas time or whatever else, and not enough Halloween that are about Halloween, not about a serial killer who kills on Halloween or whatever, but about the holiday itself. And this is the holiday movie for Halloween. Yeah.
I totally agree. Halloween 3 kind of does this too.
Correct. Yeah.
And a lot of people hated that when it came out because it didn't have Michael Myers in it. Now it's gained respect in, you know, the years that have passed. But this movie is awesome.
And I had to eat some crow, some pumpkin innards, some whatever, just because this is produced by Bryan Singer, who is not one of my favorite people. But he obviously did good with this. And Michael Dougherty, the writer-director of this, has gone on to do other stuff too. And this was just so cleverly done from a screenplay wise. That's probably my top jack-o'-lantern for this is the screenplay, the way that it is structured and shown, and the little quote Easter eggs or whatever you would call them, cameos that are thrown out in the timeline of this one night.
Because it takes place on Halloween. There is no timeline. It all just, we've talked about it. It's nonlinear, which is one of my favorite ways of storytelling.
Yes.
But it's not segmented nonlinear like my book. It's interwoven where like all of a sudden you'll see a character from another story go by and you're like, oh, that must have happened before or that must have happened after.
Right.
And it's basically, it begins like Creepshow where you have like an opening and then it goes into the first story. But the way they all overlap, it's kind of seamless in a large narrative. It's a very unique and original movie. I've never seen done this way before. Have you?
No. I thought this was, I mean, there have been other anthology movies. We've covered other anthology movies, and I'm sure we'll talk about them in Keys and stuff. But the way this interwove everything, where you would be following a character and they just bump into somebody on the street, and you see from the back that, oh, that's a person from that other story.
Yeah.
So they haven't even gotten home yet for their story.
And sort of everything is happening on Halloween night. It's just at different times and different places.
Yeah. Correct.
Well, there is one flashback, but that's to lead up to the story.
I mean, it's a key, of course, and it's a big key for me. But this reminded me a lot of Pulp Fiction, because that's that same kind of interweaving, and we're not sure where in the story we are, but we're on the same timeline.
Okay, that's
it's
great.
Just the way it is told, but no other most other anthology stories follow a bookend that tells a linear story, and then it's just flip the page to the next story, like Creepshow or like whatever.
This even copies some of that in the beginning, where they'll have a little cartoon that says "Meanwhile" or whatever, a little box that says "Suddenly" however. But that's brilliant. I did not even think of Pulp Fiction because I was only thinking of horror anthologies. But you're right, Pulp Fiction is a movie that is similar to this.
Correct. It's my biggest key coming out of this is I'm not sure if Quentin watched it or not, but I don't know.
This came out after Pulp Fiction, so.
Yeah. So maybe they were influenced by it.
That's what I'm thinking.
Because it tells, like you said, it is one night. It is, if you count the beginning, it's five different stories.
Mm-hmm.
And they are literally interwoven with really that character that you have pictured there, the whole scary scarecrow, I called him. I called him the scary scarecrow lantern character, is basically in all the stories. He basically threads through.
You're talking about the poster?
Yeah, with the scarecrow skeleton.
Yes. His name is Sam, Sam Hain. Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
That's his character name. I don't think they ever say it, but that's the way he's billed.
Okay.
And to give a brief synopsis,
sure.
Which is kind of hard because they do all overlap. We basically have the opening where a couple is going home from a Halloween party.
Yep.
She's over it, decides she is going to go ahead and take the Halloween decorations down, even though it's, you know, late at night or whatever, or it's nighttime. And he goes in and to watch his his sexy tape to get ready for a night with her. And I'm like, well, I guess maybe it's on video because it's porn. I don't know. Why would you be watching a video in 2007? Who would have a VHS player? For a minute, I kind of got lost in time there.
It's the tape. It's the tape.
The tape.
She said, put the tape in, you know, everything. I was assuming that it was probably them, you know.
Maybe.
And that's why it's still a VHS and they're still watching it.
Maybe. But that's the little intro story. While he is inside waiting on her, she gets murdered in the yard and he doesn't hear her screams because he's hearing the screams of orgasmic bliss on this tape.
Of course. They sound so similar, you know. I mean.
Then we have a story of it's called The Principal. It's about a man that basically poisons a heavy set child that's going around smashing pumpkins and being just a little delinquent. And then he, well, I don't know if I should tell all the details. He beheads the kid and is teaching his son the value of Halloween, but instead of carving jack-o'-lanterns, they're carving the little boy's head, which is very EC Comics Creepshow-esque.
Very much. That was my big reference out of it. Yeah. Even down to the kid's line of, you have to help me with the eyes, you know, sort of thing. Yeah. And then also, I like the way that's set up because that's also the progression into the rules. You know, there are rules. One of my, again, we're jumping the keys, but not, but.
We're jumping because this movie jumps all over the place.
Scream, you know, has the rules they mentioned. You know, they have the rules in this several times too, which are, you know, you have to wear a costume. You have to keep it on the whole time. You can't take it off. You have to, don't blow out the jack-o'-lanterns. You know, those kind of things. So the principal dad character is the one that's talking about those rules. Mm-hmm. You know, always check your candy. Which, by the way, man, that's a lot of vomit in that scene.
That's a key in itself right there.
That's a lot of vomit right there. But anyway, go ahead.
It's really hard to get the overlap sensation in. But as he's burying this kid's body, he sees his next-door neighbor struggling with something in the house after he goes in, after yelling at him.
Yeah.
That plays up later in, like, the fourth story. Two other stories that exist in this narrative are a really scary school bus massacre is the name of the story, where these, I guess you would say, disabled children are all the parents of disabled children hire the bus driver to drive all their kids off a cliff, which is just, it's very EC Comics again. And, of course, those kids end up playing into it's actually a rock quarry, which is also a very creep show. And it plays into, obviously, later stories with, other people. There is a surprise party, I don't know that it's a surprise party, but it's called the surprise party. And that, has to do with who you think is going to be the victim of a vampire ends up being the aggressor, because the trick is that she is a werewolf and we don't know it till the very end. So this story has a vampire and a werewolf in it, which is very Halloween and very traditional. And I am a sucker for that shit.
Me too. And the way they did it too, the way they told the story. You know, I mean, it starts out with these four girls getting costumes and getting dressed, and then they're looking for guys. And you get the sincere impression that the older sister, the younger sister, she ends up dressed like Snow White. The younger sister is dressed up like Little Red Riding Hood. And you get the impression that she's going to lose her virginity tonight. That's the thing. You need to pick your guy, because this is going to be your first.
It's so Halloween. It's like the girl setting up Laurie Strode, and her name is Laurie.
Yes. Yep.
And you're like, oh my God, this guy knows what he's doing.
And then the twist at the end is great. And the tie-in of that twist to the principal and to everything else is really interesting too. And the school bus one, I don't think should be derided, because it starts out as like a quote prank by Emma the girls doing this, and ends up being, a really vengeance story based on the real thing. Very, very EC comic.
All of this is. And that's why I didn't even harp on him having the little comic captions occasionally, because it read, I mean, the movie felt like a comic book at times.
Yeah.
Very much like Creepshow.
Now, I had a question that I was kind of confused over, because even in the very, some homage things in it. And by the way, you know, we always state it about here, but we should at the very beginning of every episode. If you haven't watched this, go watch it, because we're spoiling it. But anyway, at the very beginning, the couple, when they are getting ready to go inside and everything else, you see a bunch of kids leave the old man's house, which is across the street. You don't realize that at the time, but when you watch it again, you do. And those kids leaving are the kids from the school bus. They're the vengeance.
Well, I know you see Sam trick-or-treating a few times, too. The little right. murderous kid. Yeah.
Right. Well, he's, yeah, whatever he is.
And for all I know, he was on that bus, too. I don't,
I don't know. But you see them there. But he calls her Emma. And the husband calls her Emma.
Okay.
That's also the name of the little girl who's the angel pulling the prank with the kids. Is it the same character? I was very confused about that.
I did not catch that. And if it is, then it's gone off the charts as far as being dreamlike.
Or the three kids, the little boy who's the pirate, mm-hmm. the Emma who's the angel, the older boy, whatever. Right, who do the prank on Rhonda, the witch girl?
It's those girls. I mean, those people right there.
Correct. Do they die? All three of them die?
Everyone dies except for the Asperger girl.
Rhonda.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who's the witch?
Yeah.
Who
knows all the history? She shuts the elevator door and goes up and leaves them to get murdered by the kids in the rock quarry.
Okay, so mm-hmm. then that Emma, who's the grown up, is not her grown up.
No, that must be coincidental.
Yeah, I just missed a bit of coincidence. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. All right. So.
Yeah, I didn't catch that, but you know what? I've got the cast, so I can look at it later. Maybe I'll catch it. What I was going to talk a little bit about the people behind this. You mentioned Michael Dougherty. He wrote and directed this.
Mm-hmm.
He's known for Godzilla, King of the Monsters, the one that came out in 2019, and I have not seen that.
Haven't either, but
I like some of these modern monster movies. I don't know. I need to see them. I have not seen Skull Island, too, and it's on my list. He's also known for Krampus, which I've never seen, but is a Christmas horror movie. So this guy is into the seasonal horror.
He's into seasonal horror. That works for me. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And then Trick or Treat 2 has been announced and he is involved. So there's going to be a sequel apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's in pre-production right now. So I guess it finally got some love after being shelved and stepped on for so many years.
Well, okay then. Good.
And then he also wrote for Bryan Singer, which is why Bryan entrusted him to do this. He wrote X-Men Apocalypse, which I believe is Singer's return to the X-Men. I can't remember.
Yeah. Yep.
And then he is also the writer of, and I mentioned this to you on just on the sly, the new Hellraiser series that's being developed. He is the writer of.
Wow. I'll be curious to see what he does with that because this was a great job.
Well, the reason this is a great job is he has a lot of respect for things that have happened in the past in the horror movie world. So hopefully he has the same respect for Barker going into the Hellraiser world.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully
that's fun. I mean, that's fun to anticipate. Like you said, it was originally slated to be released in 2007, but without any explanation or reason, Warner Brothers pulled the film from schedule. And, the only reason that people think it may have happened is because Saw 4 was slated for release around the same time. Cause God knows we need another Saw movie instead of something fucking original.
Well, also I think Superman Returns had come out. And that was both Dougherty and Bryan Singer.
You're right.
It might have been backlash from the studio for them because it bombed so bad.
It bombed. So they yanked this and put Saw 4 in its place, which makes me mad.
Yeah,
really
me too.
Makes me mad. So anyway, and then finally it came out on DVD in 2009.
Me too. You guys are listening to this on Halloween, so you should go watch it right now.
I highly recommend it. Yeah,
tonight you should watch this movie.
I don't know that it's streaming. Great. I had to watch a DVD, so you may have to rent it.
May have to rent it, find it, keep it, buy it. It's worth it. It's good.
Do you want to talk about any particular scenes?
Oh my gosh, there's so many that I like in this. First of all, as a heterosexual male, a bunch of girls, Bacchanal werewolf orgy in the woods, not a bad scene at all. Worked for me really well. I like that, especially to Marilyn Manson's Sweet Dreams. Excellent. That was perfect.
I love that. Kind of like The Hunger when they use Bela Lugosi's dead.
Yep. Yeah, it's that kind of feel to it. I liked the school bus scene. The school bus, the retro of it was just creepy and such a cool, I guess, flavor. Or
it's almost a sepia tone type.
Yeah, but their costumes filter too. And in research, I found out that their costumes are based on actual disabled kids' homemade costumes.
Where did they get this shit?
The kids in the bus in the scene are actually disabled children. He actually found disabled children to do that because he thought it would add authenticity to it. And I went, oh my gosh, it's pretty creepy. But just their design, you know, even like the ghost and the skull, I mean, they're homemade and they can tell.
Old. And they look very they have like they're from the 50s or something.
Yeah, they have a vintage quality to them, which also added to that whole feel to it. I thought that was really great. I thought the, I guess my other favorite one.
I mean, I have a lot of scenes that are just, that are great. I mean, from each story. I mean, it's just a well shot movie. The principal sitting on the steps with the kid before he gets sick and realizes he's been poisoned. And mm-hmm. then him burying the body in the backyard, and the kid keeps coming to the window and being really loud, and like he's trying to bury a body.
Yeah.
And he keeps getting interrupted by either his kid or the next door neighbor.
And then the neighbor's there and the body comes to life and he's having to try to stomp on it while he's talking to the neighbor.
Yeah.
And then I noticed that later on when the neighbor is giving out candy, this is before all this happened. The kids that he gives candy to are the kids that he's burying in the backyard. It's the same three kids. One's a clown, one's something else, and the last one is Sam, the pumpkin head kid. Those three kids that are with him are the bodies that he's burying in the backyard.
I don't understand. You're going to have to elaborate.
It's part of the timeline thing. So we see the dad, and the dad is burying bodies in the backyard. Not just the fat kid, because the fat kid's dead.
Right.
But a clown is what comes to life trying to pull on his leg, and he's beating it with a shovel, and he's cutting a finger off of it to throw to the dog and everything else, right?
Well, I didn't get that. I thought that was the fat kid.
No. No, that's look at it again, because I watched it twice because I was going, this is really cool, when I read it online and I had to go back.
So
there are three bodies in there that he's burying, plus the fat kid. The fat kid is who he pulls out, pulls off the tarp, throws the fat kid in, starts burying them all,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, in the timeline, if you go earlier, when it first shows the old man at his house and everything, he has the trick-or-treaters come and he's scaring them because he comes from the dark. You know, it's that whole, the door opens and you don't see anything in the dark house. And then you see the two eyes mm-hmm. and they slowly, and then it's the old man stumbling forward, right? Which is a great Halloween homage. I love it in general. But he gives them candy. And the last person he gives candy to is the little kid with the scarecrow kid.
Yeah.
Who's dragging a bag, which, by the way, as he goes down the steps, is cats. It goes, meow, 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 as he's going down the steps. Which, all these little things, I was going, oh, my God, this has so much to it. This is so cool.
It does. And it's dirty and nasty.
Right. It's awful. Yeah. Anyway, those kids obviously go next door to the principal. This is before the fat kid shows up.
Okay.
And he kills them.
Okay.
Because later on, when the old man's in the backyard, da, 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 that's the clown.
In my head, I had it that it was the same kids that played the prank, but it must have just been a different set of kids.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And then there's another one that I loved, another little Easter egg-y kind of thing, which is showing the bag as Sam is dragging it down the streets, and he bumps into somebody, and it's the girl, the robot girl from the very beginning.
From the very beginning. Yeah.
Little stuff like that, I just loved the way he did. He didn't have to take the time to do that.
No.
To get that costume ready and to get that character ready, just to do this one little walk down the sidewalk.
I keep envisioning how he wrote it and outlined it. Like, he must have just had a massive billboard with cards where he was like, just like when they solve murder cases and take yarn and stretch it to each little card because everything connects. It just kind of blew my mind how brilliant it was for
The prank story order. when the guy they're trying to get jack-o'-lanterns and Emma says we need a set number of jack-o'-lanterns and they can't find them because somebody is going around destroying all the jack-o'-lanterns, which is what Fat Kid was doing.
That's what the Fat Kid's doing. And you just mentioned that Little Sam bumps into Robot Woman who gets murdered in the opening and he's the one that murders her.
Yep.
Because you realize at the end, he's the one that jumps up out of that box and he's covered in a sheet, but he attacks her and kills
her. And the biggest tie reveal they do with that is the fact that the one guy who we think is a vampire who, and the Pankins,
Paquin, yeah.
Paquin's Little Red Riding Hood is going to be her first, is the principal.
That's right. So what is it with the vampire? I was thinking it was a real vampire.
No, it's him. That's the way he kills, as a serial killer.
He
bites and stabs. He was stabbing the girl, too, against the wall, sort of thing.
Okay. Wow. That totally escaped me. I was thinking it was a real vampire.
I thought so, too. And then suddenly she...
But you're
pulls
right.
The mask
he is
off.
The one that's is captured at the end.
Yeah.
Maybe I just thought he was another one captured. I don't know.
Well, and that was really the weakest link. I mean, if there are any negatives, but the weakest or the weirdest transition is we see her, going along the road, Little Red Riding Hood going along the road, and she hears something, turns around. She turns around. It's the vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And he bites her. Right? Or starts to bite her, and we cut. And then we cut to her sister on the phone going, where is she? She's not here yet. Da, da, da. Mom always said she was the runt of the litter, which I thought that was a great
That's a
line.
Great line. Yeah.
But they're all waiting. They each have their boyfriends and people they've picked up, and they're waiting for her. And all of a sudden, the vampire body falls from somewhere. Thrown off a cliff, thrown down a tree. I don't know. He just falls in the middle, right near the campfire. And then Anna Paquin shows up, I forgot her character's name, sorry. Lori. She shows up, and when she finally kills him, he's the vampire guy. So I guess she just tossed him from
somewhere
else? I
think she tossed
him.
Yeah, you're right. And now that all makes sense. I don't know why. I just had it in my head because they played it up so well with the first murder where he leaves the woman on the street against the building.
Yeah.
And it looks like she's been drained.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. It is that guy. He's a psycho, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And he plays it well. That actor does it really well.
Dylan Baker.
Kind of nice with menace kind of thing.
He looks like Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
There was one other thing I was going to mention. Oh, you were talking about logic. The only other logic thing that I had a problem with is that there would be an old elevator at the quarry that would work.
Oh, yeah.
But it was very creepy.
Yeah, it was really creepy. Nice. You have to kind of give them that. You also, come on, it's kind of the conceit. So 8 sets of parents really all got together
and
said, let's kill our kids.
Kill their kids. Yeah. But that's the whole comic book aspect. That's where I would give them leeway because it is very much like Creepshow Comics and Tales of the Crypt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
As far as logic.
Definitely. And I had a bit of a flip in this one because early notes I wrote at the very beginning, I said I didn't like the credit music and I thought it was really in your face, bombastic kind of music. But then a third of the way through, I'm writing, this is cool music too. This music really works. Da, da, da. So evidently he wanted that kind of, I'm in your face, it's a scary movie kind of feel at the beginning, but then went to really good mood music for the rest of it. So that
worked. I didn't mind it.
No, not at all. I thought some of it was great. The bottom of the quarry music underneath was really good, and the suspense music for the end with the old man was really good.
So let me ask you this. This was another thing that bothered me. When they get to the bottom and the bus is sticking up out of it, do you think the quarry was just – there hadn't been a lot of rain and the water had gone down? I mean, why was the bus sticking up out?
Well, then also, why were all the masks still floating? I think that's them coming out. They actually came up from the quarry.
Oh, okay. That would make more kind sense and be thing. More scary.
Because, you know, she's reaching down, almost ready to grab a mask again. And I'm going, really? The mask was here from whatever, how many years ago this was done?
50 years ago. Yeah.
50 years ago?
Crazy.
And that was like one of the last tie-ins, too, was the fact that, which I kind of got that one, because they said the voiceover is saying what happened to the bus driver, and they're saying his body was never found, and there he's showing the bus driver climb out of the quarry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, I thought
like,
that was.
I was like, you better come back and tell me what happened with him, or I'm going to be pissed.
So I thought that was a cool reveal at the end when they did that. So that was good.
Very cool. Well, as far as cast, I don't have a lot of information. I mean, there weren't like alternates or anything as far as people in this, but some of these should be mentioned probably. Dylan Baker, namely, is the guy that is the one I thought was a vampire and is poisoning kids and carving their heads up for his son on Halloween.
Yep.
He is out there, man. And he's like a comedic actor that looks like Stephen Colbert. So it's really unique to have him in this kind of role.
Yeah, he does have a lot of Colbert to him. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other biggie, of course, is what's his face? Brian Cox plays the next door neighbor, Mr. Krieg. And you said he's across the street?
I thought he's beside the principal, but across the street from the opening couple that have all of the ghosts in their yard.
Yes, you're right. Because I got the distinct impression that he was next door to the principal.
Yeah, he's right next door.
All right.
Because he looks through the holes.
Phenomenal actor. Last we saw him was in Autopsy of Jane Doe, but I mean, he also played Hannibal Lecter in Michael Mann's Manhunter. And he's a very underappreciated actor, I think. I just think he's marvelous. And I don't know if you knew this, but he actually said, make me look like John Carpenter. And they gave him that scraggly hair.
The scraggly hair. Long, scraggly hair.
Yeah, because there's so much homage to John Carpenter in this movie. He knew it. And he said, make me look like him.
Right. I could see that.
And then, of course, Anna Paquin was the other lead, and she, I mean, I don't know if you'd call her a lead, but the other more known actress in this, and she is Little Red Riding Hood / werewolf. Anybody else you want to mention? I mean, I have their names.
I definitely want to mention Lauren Lee Smith. She played Danielle, the older sister, hottie.
You just think she's hot.
No, I recognized her, and I kept going, where have I seen her? Where have I seen her? She was actually on CSI for like 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
She was on the series, and she was a great character in it as well. She was really good. And then I immediately recognized the guy from the very beginning who played – his character name was Henry. Henry.
The one that's watching the porno tape.
Yeah. Because he was – Hilo on Battlestar Galactica, the remake.
He's got a really weird name. It's Tamo Paneket.
Yeah, it's kind of like Indian.
It may be Native American. That's what I was thinking. It looks like T-A-H-M-O-H and then Panek, P-E-N-I-K-E-T-T.
Yeah, and he's really great. He's done a lot of science fiction.
Yeah,
he's done
a little bit of Atlantis
and everything I've seen. So so I recognized him immediately. I went, oh, okay, this got some pretty big people in it.
Yeah.
And Leslie Bibb is in this too. She is Emma, the little young Emma, who later on grows up to do a bunch of movies and stuff. She's in Iron Man. She's in Talladega Nights. So
her
she's
name is Leslie Bibb.
Bibb.
Yeah.
B-I-B-B.
Yeah. Yeah, and like you said, her name was Emma. And what was the first lady's name? You said her name was Emma, too?
I thought it was Emma, too, because I remember – I didn't look that one up. I should have. But I remember him saying to her, Emma, come on. And she's like, no, I'm going to tear everything down or, you know, fix it or whatever. So – but I don't remember her, really.
You know what? Maybe she is the same person. No, that doesn't make sense.
I don't see how she could be.
It's very strange.
Maybe.
For anyone out there that has some inside knowledge on this, please let us know, because that is kind of confusing if their names are both Emma. I'll move on to awards. Of course, this movie was not released really until it was on DVD, but I have that it won some awards. The Fangoria Chainsaw Awards gave it Best Limited Release Direct-to-Film Video, and they gave Dylan Baker a Best Supporting Actor for playing Principal.
Okay.
And then I have some lesser ones that I don't know as much about. Fright Meter Awards gave it Best Horror Movie and Best Director in 2009, as well as Best Supporting Actor, Dylan Baker. But they nominated Brian Cox and Michael Dougherty for the screenplay. Screamfest gave it the win for the Audience Award, and that was Michael Dougherty who received it. And then I mentioned not too long ago in something, Toronto International Film Festival has this thing called After Dark, and it was a nominee for Best Feature Film in 2009, After Dark.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so it won awards, even though it went direct to video or direct to whatever, TV. It is not on 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die, and I kind of disagree with that, and I think that it's probably because of, like you said, it getting kind of suffocated. Maybe he doesn't know about it, because I think he would appreciate this movie.
Yeah.
His list, for
sure.
Oh,
yeah. Definitely for the homages that it does and everything.
I mean, it's such a great movie for us to cover on Johnny Has the Keys, because there is so much influence clearly in this movie that, you know, just speaks to the heart of what we do.
Well, and before we get together, just so brief clear up. So, no, her name is not Emma. Her name is Macy, a young girl. So the three kids are Sarah, Chip, Macy, and Rhonda is they call her Rhonda the retard, but she's an idiot savant, they say.
Oh, that's right. I said Asperger's, but I mean, I'm assuming it's something of that nature.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. She's functional, but highly intelligent, just not socially adept or what have you.
Right.
And she's cool. I mean, you root for her in the whole story.
Well, and I've got a key for her since we're transferring the key. She's Velma from Scooby-Doo. That's who she was. That's who she reminded me of.
Yeah.
That whole sequence was kind of like a Scooby-Doo sort of sequence to me.
Agreed. So, I need to be typing some of these because I just lifted most of mine from IMDb. But, I mean, we've mentioned at least a half dozen at least already.
Well, I've got, she's Velma from Scooby-Doo. I think we should start keys with just all the anthology movies. So, you said Creepshow already.
In particular, Creepshow, because it is written all over this movie.
Well, and the one that this is in, Tales from the Crypt, of course, EC Comics, all that. But I've also got Tales from the Dark Side. Do you remember that series?
Yeah,
and absolutely. This was similar to that because there were some funny kind of elements in there too, right before they would do a shocking kind of scary thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like him, the kid vomiting up so much and everything else, and then him trying to carry the body inside. Or like him being interrupted by the dog and throwing the finger at the dog kind of thing. You know, that sort of. That was very Tales of the Dark Side kind of feel to me.
Well, I'm going to go there since you just did. The whole vomiting thing is straight out of Stand By Me. It's Lard Ass Logan.
Oh,
the
blueberry
pie eating contest where he's
barfing
up pies for like 5 minutes. And this kid's barfing up chocolate for like 5 minutes. I was like, this is totally sick.
That was totally, totally sick.
Yeah.
That was pretty gross.
Yeah. So it was just another Stephen King reference, but yeah.
True. I've also got another Stephen King, Pet Sematary, when the old man's in the house and he gets his ankle cut. That's just straight out of Gage in Pet Sematary.
For sure. I mean, it's totally intentional, too. You know he's doing it as an homage. Yeah, yeah.
And that's another thing, too. You know, so many people try to do homages and stuff like that and look like they're ripping off and not respecting the original IP or the original artwork or the artist or whatever. And this doesn't never, it never felt like that to me. It never felt like he was trying to rip off other people. It felt like he was going, remember this? Kind of wink, wink, you know, kind of thing.
Well, and, you know, I always equate the movie Halloween with Halloween. It's just a one of those things that's synonymous.
Yeah.
And it's like his, it was like he was trying to give us his version of Halloween. He wanted to have a movie remembered the same way, not to replace it, but to be held in high esteem in regard to the holiday.
Well, and like you said, Halloween definitely is here not only because of the holiday, the jack-o'-lanterns. By the way, I've got in my notes, what was the jack-o'-lantern budget for this movie? It must have been huge. There were like hundreds of them.
Yeah, for anyway, sure.
But Halloween, but also Laurie, like you said, he named one of his lead characters after Laurie Strode, or in Strode. Memory of Strode. And the Halloween 3, the whole Halloween 3 wanted to be this. It was wanted to be an anthology about the holiday itself and the pagan rituals and all that, and it didn't work. And this one does.
Right. And they also mentioned those pagan rituals, which I knew you'd get a kick out of.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
When she's talking about Samhain and talking about where it comes from and the Irish Celtic, and I was going,
and
yes.
Why people trick-or-treat and what it came from. Yeah, yeah. I mean, because that's the kind of stuff very similar to Christmas. You know, a lot of people relate Christmas to Christianity when a lot of it came from, like, paganism. Right. You know, Christmas trees were a pagan thing. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's when Santa Claus lays the eggs. Then before he's crucified.
Yeah. And we all get candy. Oh, my God. What else did I lift from? There's a line. There's a line key direct from John Carpenter's The Thing.
Oh, I got that one.
You got to be fucking kidding me.
You got to be fucking kidding me.
And it's when Mr. Krieg sees Sam without his mask, I think, isn't it?
No, it's even more of an homage because he cuts Sam's arm off.
Oh, that's right.
And then the arm is crawling across back to Sam's body.
And grows back on him.
Yeah, yes. It grows back
and
on him.
That's when, and it is a very Thing moment because it's like body horror. Yeah.
Oh, very.
Very, very funny. I have a picture of that too. Well, I've got a picture of him. Yeah.
I've got The Howling, which is, you know, is even in the way it's even shot with that down shot of her looking up and then transforming and all. It's very showing the hand and the arm. And all the hair growing on it and everything. Mm-hmm. It's very Halloween. I mean, The Howling kind of thing.
I had that picture up prior. But that picture right there behind me looks like The Howling, where they're all changing by the fire. Yeah.
And also the fact that they literally lose their skin. They have to rip their skin off to become the – which is very Howling, too.
Yeah. There is another homage in this movie that I wish he would have taken a little more time with because it would have been so effective for people like me and you. And it's when all the candy is on the stairs at Mr. Krieg's house and he looks up and a gumball rolls down the stairs.
Yes.
It's from The Changeling, a movie that is on our list. It's a wonderful Peter Medak, George C. Scott haunted house story.
Yep.
And in that movie, it's a ball that rolls down the stairs very slowly. In this, it's a gumball that rolls kind of fast.
Bunch of gumballs. Yeah. But well, and while we're there with Krieg, what's his name? Krieg?
Mr. Krieg. K-R-E-E-G.
Krieg. Okay. Scrooge. I mean, he's essentially Scrooge.
True.
He's the grumpy old guy that doesn't like it by humbug and gets his just rewards at the end kind of thing.
I feel like I'm forgetting ones that we mentioned earlier. Just in, you know what? I'll have to watch this before I start doing
all your show notes.
All my show notes. Stuff. Yeah, because I know we mentioned some other stuff just happenstance as we were speaking. But let's see, what else do I have? Apparently, in the school bus massacre story, there is a 1958 Plymouth that can be seen, which is from Christine.
Christine.
That one I lifted because I didn't catch it at the time.
I didn't see it either. So I didn't get that one.
But it would make sense because I think that story probably took place in the 50s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Little Red Riding Hood is one of my keys.
The fairy tale,
classic fairy tale, because right. you know, he does that in a big homage. A lot of it.
A lot of Ryan, I feel Creepshow in this, and I'm not going to go into details in the show notes, is specific stories in Creepshow. I mean, the whole rock quarry thing reminds me of Wilma and being,
yep.
you know, the Billy. Crate being pushed over into the rock quarry.
Just tell it to call you Billy.
Yeah, you bitch. Yep.
well, and again, it some of this is not direct influence keys like we talk about a lot, but some of it is just the feel that he's established. Mm-hmm. Some of his lighting and the way he does stuff of, you know, I'm here on the front porch of this house, but I'm actually focused on something all the way across the street on the other house. That's very Halloween and the way John Carpenter directed that. Mm-hmm. I've got one that's the same kind of feel, but not a direct reference, which is Nightmare on Elm Street. And that's this whole thing of the parents did something bad, and now their children are suffering the vengeance of it. And, you know, because they did that to Freddy.
The school bus massacre. Yeah.
Right. They did that to Freddy years ago, and now mm-hmm. Freddy comes back and haunts their children's dreams. And now, you know, they killed all their kids, and now those kids are come back to seek vengeance kind of thing.
Well, and for those of you out there that haven't guessed, because we haven't mentioned it yet, the school bus driver ends up being Mr. Krieg. And that mm-hmm. is who Sam is trying to kill at the end of the movie. Sam, that is the little pumpkin-headed boy that regenerates his hand. And it is who we see, who, as the next-door neighbor is burying the kids, sees his next-door neighbor, you know, hollering for help that something's attacking him.
Yeah.
And he does nothing. And then we find out later on in the end of the movie that he's being attacked by Sam and that he is indeed the bus driver that drove the kids off the cliff. God, that's a lot of tie-in.
Yeah.
It's just amazing how he does this shit.
Now, I will say, when I should have said earlier, another miss, in my opinion, or something. Like you said, he should have done longer with the gumball. Mm-hmm. I don't think he ever should have taken Sam's mask off. I thought Sam was much scarier without the weird-looking pumpkin head kid thing. I didn't like that design that much. I like the childishness of it. But look at those two images. I love the one, the scarecrowy one to me is much scarier.
It, you know why? Because it looks more sci-fi. It looks more alien. The without it does. It doesn't look as horrific as it does with the mask. Does that make sense?
You're saying the makeup looks alienish?
The makeup looks alienish. It all of a sudden he looks like he's from another planet. It's not really realistic looking.
Yeah, because they've tried to do a weird kind of jack-o'-lantern look to it.
Exactly. And you they know. Really never explain that. I mean, why is he a jack-o'-lantern kid?
No, well, he's the spirit of Halloween.
I think it's the spirit
of Samhain.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that he is scarier with the mask on. They should have probably just left it and let him regenerate his hand.
But then again, that to me, the reason I say it is because it came up as one of my keys. That's another Halloween thing, because in Halloween, there's that one moment where she takes Jason's mask off.
True.
Or Michael's mask off, and he has to put it back on, which is what Sam does too. So, I liked it's just such a clever, clever script all the way through.
I've got others that I did not know, but I lifted from IMDb.
Yeah, please.
This guy, Michael Dougherty, credits this movie's influence as primarily being a movie called The Midnight Hour. Have you ever seen this?
No.
It's from 1985, and I don't think I have either.
Oh, got to add it to my list.
I guess so. So he was influenced while writing the script by that particular movie. So those of you out there, if you like 1985's The Midnight Hour, then you're on the right page.
Yeah.
I also I've got that the school bus story is an homage to the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, which is another Halloween icon because it originally takes place in a cemetery overgrown with pumpkins.
In this story?
I guess. That's just what I lifted this from IMDb.
So like in the original screenplay, they had it takes place at a pumpkin patch, not in a quarry. Okay. That makes sense, I guess.
Oh, you know what? And originally, yeah. So it means it did start off that way, but that's not what ended up in the finished film. Excuse me.
Okay. All right.
You mentioned Superman, Bryan Singer, but I don't know if you noticed, but the hold music for the 911 call is John Williams' Can You Read My Mind from the original Superman 1978.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of a, I guess, a tech key, you would say.
Okay.
And during the scene where Laurie's sister calls her while she sits alone in the street in the background at the campfire, a remix of the song Cry Little Sister can be heard playing. And that song was used Lost Boys, 1980.
Great movie.
Yeah. Or actually not 1980, but it was in the 1980s for sure.
Yes.
So that's a good vampire connection. In the scene where Laurie and her friends reveal that they're werewolves, Sweet Dreams from Marilyn Manson's playing. You mentioned that. So we got a little bit of a music key. That song also played in the credits of the House on Haunted Hill remake. And then later on, Mr. Creek's flipping through channels, and one of the channels is playing the original House on Haunted Hill.
Oh, yeah, it's with the black and white with the woman with the noose.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that.
I mean,
I didn't catch that one.
This stuff cannot be accidental. I mean, it really cannot. It's very strange.
This is clever.
I felt this from the movie itself, and then I really got it when I read this, and that is Carrie. And with Rhonda being special. Rhonda's house was modeled after the white residence in Carrie, the 1976 version.
And she ends up,
and she's the wallflower that they all ostracize, you know, very much like they did Carrie in the Stephen King book. There's a lot of Stephen King and a lot of John Carpenter in this movie, obviously. And a lot of 80s horror too. And then you mentioned the Pet Sematary one, which I had as well. I think that's all I have, but God knows.
That's pretty good.
There's a bunch in here.
I really thank you for turning me on to this one because I would never have watched it, obviously, and I had struggled because I watched the other one first.
Wow, I've hit two out of the park in the first 10 movies, this and The Innocents.
Yeah, both really, really good movies. I just really enjoyed it. And I think this could become an annual for me for Halloween because it is such a good story about the holiday or movie about the holiday.
I actually picked up a DVD of it in the used record store, used bookstore, because I thought, you know what? You're probably going to like this. You may want to grab it. So.
Well, I did look up while you were doing your last ones. I did look up Midnight Hour. It was a television movie.
Oh,
from 1985 that starred Sherry Belafonte, Peter DeLuise, Kevin McCarthy, Dick Van Patten.
Love Kevin McCarthy.
Kurtwood Smith, Wolfman Jack. I mean, it's got a huge cast. LeVar Burton.
That's got to be on YouTube. We're going to have to check that out.
Yeah, we'll have to check that one out. Midnight Hour, unrated TV movie from 1985.
Yep. There you go.
Yeah,
and I guess that's going to do it.
Yeah. Thank you for this one. This one was great. And this ends our Halloween epoch that we've been doing for the past, four episodes. So thank you guys for putting up with us. Thank you guys for listening to us. We always appreciate it. If you are watching us on YouTube, if you wouldn't mind, you know, subscribing down there, we could tell you all about what we've got coming up, and you'll be alerted every time we post a new video, which it's not just these. It's not just Johnny Has the Keys. We have other ones come from the YouTube channel. And also, if you would give us a like or a recommend, if you go to Apple iTunes and give us a review, we'd certainly appreciate that. And if you want to support the show better, we would love to have you as a patron on Patreon for as little as like 99 cents a month. You can get special content that we produce there, and even including some other podcast series that we do, the original Star Trek called The Dilithium Chamber and X-Files Declassified, which is our examination of the X-Files, another scary and science fiction-y series. And Tim, I guess until next time, when hopefully we'll be in outer space or somewhere science fiction.
No, actually, we will be on Earth, but it will be science fiction. And it's the last one we'll do before we take a couple weeks off for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And it is a classic, and I mean classic. From a classic. Really from the 50s, not like this
one. Oh, cool.
That's an homage. Cool. So.
Well, then it'll be great.
Yep.
And we'll see it then. And all right. Talk to you then.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle.